Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program, and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and today is the monthly visit of Nan Calvert from the Rip Pike Water Initiative Network. And Nan has invited a very special guest, someone she knows well and has worked with a great deal, and a couple of other additional guests who are also going to be kind of telling the story of an exciting new project involving the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps. And so first of all, Nan, we welcome you back to the morning show. And let me have you introduce your friend Chris Litzau to us.
Oh, thanks, Greg. I'm always happy to be here with you. It's one of the great pleasures of my life. Yes, Chris Litzau, he and I met a number of years ago. He's been on the radio with me before. And he and I talked recently about a really exciting initiative that they have going on. And it is linked directly to addressing stormwater runoff and sort of repairing the water cycle that's really broken because of a lot of various and sundry things. And hopefully part of what he's doing will also be related to putting in native plants. In addition to that, Rip Pike Watershed Initiative is partnering with the CCC on projects in Kenosha, and we just started doing that, and it's been very successful thus far, and we hope to have a very long-term partnership.
Great. Chris Litzau, it's great to welcome you back to the morning show, and in just a second, I'm going to let you introduce a couple of other guests that are joining you that are part of some of your projects. But first, give our listeners a nice comprehensive idea of what the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps is and the kind of projects that you undertake before we start digging into the specific project that is our main focus today.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Greg. So the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps, Great Lakes CCC, derives from the Civilian Conservation Corps of the 1930s. And essentially, we do a lot of conservation. We use that model of rebuilding the community out in the field, out there, and then rebuilding our own lives inside, indoors, in a classroom, and learning a variety of credentials and academic enrichment information and scholarly information, I guess, if we can put it that way. And so like the CCC, we operate in a crew-based manner where young people from often historically underrepresented communities, populations, join us and work on a crew or join the crew, and then the crew goes out and does projects out in the community. And as I mentioned, oftentimes these are service and conservation corps type projects that they're working on. They do that typically in the mornings, and then in the afternoons they'll go into the classroom and study things like chainsaw operation, safety training, hazardous waste operations, commercial driver's license and driver's license in general, mold remediation, really all under the umbrella of modern day disaster responder in training, Greg.
Oh, very good. Explain where you are headquartered. I mean, you specifically, personally, and sort of the span of the of area that your particular group of crews operates.
Sure. So we started we started in 2012 in Racine, and the city of Racine was gracious enough to place us in or allow us to occupy a former fire station number 4. From there, we formed another campus in Milwaukee. And now, as Nan mentioned, we have kind of an informal staging or gathering area in Kenosha. Our crews, they travel all over southeastern Wisconsin. And it's about not only serving and providing service, but it's also about experience and learning. And so, for example, they may travel to Ozaukee County to work on the federal islands that are in the Milwaukee River. They might be traveling certainly to the lake shoreline to address the beach erosion, shoreline erosion. You know, so there are unique phenomena going on in our southeastern Wisconsin community, and no counties are alike, and they each offer a different learning opportunity. So the crews are traveling throughout. Jacob, who you'll hear from in a moment, you know, he brings his crew down from Milwaukee to work on projects in Kenosha and Racine and similarly up to Ozaukee County, and we're always rotating around to find and serve and learn.
One more question before we get to our two crew heads who are joining us today. Typically, what are the circumstances under which you connect with a given county and dispatch a crew to work on a given project? I mean, who is wooing who in terms of connections and making these opportunities?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So last week, Thursday, Jacob and Keontae both took their crews up to Ozaukee County, to Grafton and the Cedarburg area, because the DNR connected with us and said there's a big debris jam. A debris jam is essentially in Cedar Creek, which is a main tributary there through that community. Over the past 20 years, logs and branches had piled up and piled up and piled up, and essentially impeded the flow of water, the passage of fish to spawning areas, etc. So the DNR contacted us and said, can you come and assist? And so that was the genesis or the impetus for going to that project. Partnerships like with the Root Pike Watershed Initiative, Nan and Dave Giordano, we had an informal conversation, and wow, what you're doing, Chris, what you're doing with what your crews are doing with invasive species in Milwaukee and other counties right here in Kenosha in our backyard, we could use your help. And so that's really how it forms organically. Although we are, and I'll talk a little bit perhaps a little later about the reduce the runoff initiative. So we're really focused in that respect on a targeted approach to in the Racine community, specific to flooding and bluff erosion that we're looking at serving there. So, you know, it goes both ways, where we may be offering and we may be, our ears may be open to say, hey, we're here to help. How can we help?
And generally speaking, are you filled up with opportunities? I mean, is there no shortage of things to do that fit your mission very, very well? Or are there at least certain points in time where you really have to go looking for and generating projects to keep busy?
You know, we prioritize our projects in a number of ways. So yes, we're always looking for additional projects. And part of the priority among many variables. One is, you know, what is the degree of learning that's going to take place on this project? So as an example, we will do litter pickup, and that's essential, right? That's an important aspect to keep a community clean. Chainsawing trees is also could be a valuable experience. And so it's really about the level. One of the factors is the level of experiential learning that goes in, that's inherent in the project. And so we also, you know, when it's 90 degrees out, or when it's, you know, -5 degrees out, our crews are out there working still. And so we like to have variety. So the learning experiences should be varied, and the learning should be varied as well. And so those are some of the factors that go into requesting or responding to partnership opportunities.
Very good. So it's not just about, although it's, I'm guessing it's primarily about doing good out in the community and the rebuilding that you were talking about, but it is also about providing your participants with a valuable and beneficial experience for them.
That's exactly correct. We have the next generation of conservationists or environmental stewards or just workforce development. You know, we're transforming the next good employees. You know, if you can follow directions when it's 90 plus degrees out and continue to break a sweat, wow, you know, you'll be a good employee for any employer. And so that's really kind of our direction.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, today's morning show is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the program, and she has come up with a fantastic idea for this month's program, namely a visit from Chris Litzau, director of the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps. And even better, we have a couple of his crew supervisors with us as well for the first time on the morning show. Jacob Sanchez and Keontae Edwards. And we're going to meet the two of them in just a second. Chris, explain how you make connections with people like Jacob and Keontae and bring them aboard. And then we'll find out what each of them brings to this.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I will not, I don't want to steal their thunder. I just want to say we're really fortunate to have both of them on our team. They really add strength and capacity. And, you know, I was alluding to the fact that there's two parts to our program. One is the actual work, the byproduct or the end product of the work that we do. So if it's a debris jam, as I talked about before, the end goal is to clear all that out, right? It's a technical expertise, and it's about doing. But the other aspect is really the interpersonal skills of working with young people for whom it may be their first job or work of that type. And so being sensitive to the young person, building the rapport, and really being the colonel or the captain in the field to lead that squad, you know, using military terms. We're really fortunate. Some would say we're very blessed to have both Keontae and Jacob with us. And I shout to the mountaintops to say that over and over, that they are just excellent individuals, and they work so well with our young people who are serving as AmeriCorps members.
All right.
If I could just chime in here for a second, if you wouldn't mind, Greg.
No.
So I've had the pleasure of meeting Jacob and Keontae and getting to know them and seeing their work. And they're great ambassadors in the field. For a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, people can go out there and see these young men working really hard, obviously, and knowing what they're doing. You know, you can be amazed at their skills. But also, they're great ambassadors for the conservation world because they understand what they're doing. They understand its purpose and why it's so important. And even though it seems like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to go out there and cut down more knotweed and do this, that, and the other thing, you know, they have the big picture. And if people happen along from the general public, both Keontae and Jacob, I haven't met Haley yet, but both Keontae and Jacob can explain to people what they're doing and why it's so important. So, you know, they're a triple threat, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, very good. Well, after a buildup like that, you have a lot to live up to, Jacob and Chianti, and we're excited to hear from you now. Jacob Sanchez, let's begin with you. Tell us first a little bit about yourself, where you are from originally, and then what, in terms of your interests and so on, made you a good fit for the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps.
Sure, Greg, thanks. I'm originally from Milwaukee. I grew up here. Went to Milwaukee Public Schools all the way through my schooling, and then went on to study at the University of Wisconsin-Madison with a degree in geography. From there, I, you know, continued my interest in conservation work and generally just getting my hands dirty outside by working with the Bureau of Land Management in Colorado as a park ranger. And I loved my work out there. I did a lot of conservation work with them, building trails, you know, interacting with the public, you know, being a general steward of the land and communicator of what good practice is out in nature. But I felt that I wanted to be doing that kind of work, but back in the city and the region that I grew up in, because it's, you know, I grew up loving being around Lake Michigan and going camping in the forests of Wisconsin and, you know, generally just enjoying what there is to offer right here in my hometown. So after completing my stint with the Bureau of Land Management, I sought out similar work here, and I came across the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps, and I felt the program was a great fit for my background and my interests, and that I could do some good working for Great Lakes.
Great. I'm curious, for someone who grew up, I'm assuming, in the heart of an urban metropolis, was your hunger to get your hands dirty out in nature because of where you were growing up and that you kind of felt like this was something, in a sense, missing? Because I think a lot of young people probably grow up in the middle of a big city and in a sense, don't realize what's out there that they're missing, in a sense. How did you make that connection yourself?
Yeah, I mean, so yes, I definitely grew up in a very urban environment. But I think from an early age, I also recognized the interaction between the urban space and the natural world. And, you know, maybe I didn't know it at the time that that's the connection I was making, but I certainly do now. You know, like I said, I bring it back to Lake Michigan. You know, I grew up only a few minutes walk, a bike ride away, a drive away from so many different stretches of parkland and beach land, and even just the urban shoreline of Lake Michigan. And so I think my initial connection between an urban space and nature starts with Lake Michigan. But I definitely had the opportunity to go and, you know, leave the city and go to, you know, whatever state park it may have been. Kolar Andre comes to mind as one that I would go to a lot as a kid. And so I definitely always had that connection between living in an urban and bigger city environment, but also realizing that there's value and beauty to being able to connect with nature. So I would say that's kind of that dichotomy.
Fantastic. So Jacob Sanchez, a crew supervisor now with the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps, as is Chianti Edwards, who is also joining us today. So, Chianti, what about your own story? First of all, where are you from originally? And what was sort of your path of connection to the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps?
Well, I'm originally from Chicago, Illinois. I moved to Racine when I was about 7 to 8 years old. How I first got involved with the Great Lakes CCC was I was in middle school, getting ready to transfer to high school, and I wanted to find a way to get into the workforce early. And when I went to look for that, I went to my local resource center, and they hooked me up with a guy named Sam Pina. Sam Pina showed me like a resume building class, and then he eventually met me up with Chris. Chris offered me to work along at that time. I wasn't old enough, so I couldn't work as a job, but I asked to volunteer. So I'd show up, and until I got old enough, I'd work as a volunteer, meeting him at the Racine Rec. So at the Racine Rec, we started with driver's ed. He's actually who helped me get my driver's license. And this is all back in about 2013, so I was pretty young. But as far as how I just like myself, how it transformed, it's actually what made me enjoy environmental work. Being a part of the Corps actually showed me that I could actually do things that could impact my community around me, and then I could actually feel good about doing it. So like the beautification of Racine's Beach, we hold a field trip there every summer for I think it's the seventh graders. Every seventh grader in Racine does a cycle of a field trip where we teach them about conserving their beach, doing things to better their beach, clean it, to keep the water swimmable and keep it well managed. It's actually like it's a really good feeling to know that like the place that I've grown up in the most or I lived in most of that I can impact it and I've networked with and touched elbows with some of the aldermen and other people who like can see that I'm helping out my city.
Wow. And I love the fact that you started out when you were, if I understood correctly, too young to be an employee, but then you stepped up to be a volunteer, and it sounds like you were one heck of a volunteer, and so the rest is history.
Well, yeah. I hope I was.
Very good. So Chris, let's explain the role that crew supervisors like Jacob and Keontae play in terms of the work that is done by the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps and the projects that you work on. What kind of responsibilities do they shoulder?
Sure. Yeah. So they are the, I used the term previously, like captain, colonel, lieutenant. They're really the patriarch of that team. And so they are the leader, and they are the teacher, and they are the exemplary role model to lead and show how things get done safely, effectively, with impact, and with productivity. And so what does that mean? Well, at the boots on the ground level, that means that they're transporting their crew members, their crew, to the project site. They're the just as Nan had said previously, they're the ambassador. They're the first face of the Great Lakes CCC that the project sponsor meets. And so they set the tone, not only with the project sponsor, but also with their team. And, so they have the great challenge of being in the middle to keep the project sponsor happy and also to teach, train, model, and motivate their crew members who may not be too encouraged to execute the project at hand, to execute the mission at hand. So it takes a lot of savvy and a lot of technical and a lot of interpersonal skills, quite a few interpersonal skills to be able to have.
That is one heck of a challenge. I mean, what you were just talking about, kind of a two-headed hydra of not just knowing what has to be done and the best way to do it, but then motivating the members of the crew to do it and to do it well and so on. And the people who are in the crew, generally speaking, who are we talking about and why are they there?
Why don't I defer to Keontae and Jacob to explain, you know, some of their crew members.
Sure. And also tell us, Jacob, let's start with you. How large a crew are we generally talking about on a project? And is it a crew that kind of sticks together, or is there a lot of kind of overlap and in and out between particular people and that are on these crews?
Sure. I'll say first that Keo has been here much longer, so he's seen the evolution of crews and the way that things have unfolded on a much larger scale than I have. But the gist of it is that generally the crew members / students are enrolled in our program at the beginning of what would be like this fall semester. And typically that's about 15 to 20 students. A lot of them are coming from a point where they've aged out of traditional high school, and they still want to seek their high school diploma and get skills, work skills while doing that. And not to mention there is an AmeriCorps stipend to go along with it. So it's a multi-point incentive in that front. But generally, yes, there's a crew. There's going to be a crew / class based in Milwaukee, and then a crew / class based in Racine. The size of that can fluctuate depending on many things, but generally it's anywhere from as few as 3 or 4 to up to 10.
Wow.
In a crew. Yeah.
Very
Keo,
good.
Have anything to add to that?
Not really. You pretty much.
All right.
Keontae, why don't you tell us what you have found to be kind of the stiffest challenges as a crew supervisor? What is the biggest challenge for you?
Well, sometimes with our people coming from like the inner city, sort of like we were there, they're not always they're not always the happiest when it comes to getting into the dirty and mucky work. off back. It's more of a gross thing but once you get guys into that like working and being able to create like have fun with it, we were taking down a debris jam, and we were finding tennis balls, and we were finding like little stuff. This just happened probably a week ago, but us finding little things, like we were laughing, having fun, like when you're able to do that and add that into the mix, you always end up with a good atmosphere for newcomers and people coming in.
Yeah, not to mention they really come alive when you put a power tool in their hand. It's always fun.
and one other thing I'd like to add, Jacob, I might have been here longer, but you've come in, you fit right in.
I appreciate it.
How physically grueling is the work that these crews do? I mean, are we talking about it takes a lot of muscle, and at the end of the day, are you racked with aches and pains? Or, I mean, what does this physically mean for the typical crew member? And for you, even as supervisors, I suspect you get in there and do a lot of this hard work yourself. You're not just telling other people what to do. Is it hard work in that respect?
Jacob, would you like to?
Yeah, I can start that. Well, because we run the gambit of so many different types of work, I'll say yes and no. There are times, and I'll also say that it's probably more of a mental fortitude thing than a physical thing. I had a student ask me like a month ago or so, like, I was, using a pickaxe, we were digging basically trenches for planting, and I was just going steady, and he turned to me and said, "How do you keep going?" And I said, "Well, I pace myself. I don't overexert myself at any point. And it's about knowing what your physical and mental limit are. And then you can push those boundaries if you do it incrementally." So I would say overall, yes, there are moments where, you know, like Keo said, we were trudging through a stream last week, and we were removing giant logs, and that's physically taxing in a number of ways. But if you pace yourself, you know your limits, you can do a lot more than you think you can. So, yeah.
And I'd like to tag on and say Jacob is definitely like saying like that's exactly what it is. There's a mental aspect and a physical aspect. All over the years, when it comes to like the logistics of how we plan a debris jam or how we plan a cleanup, you want to think, you want to have a good mind, a strong mind about things, because you want to think quick on your feet if anything happens or anything changes in that regard. But you also want to be physically strong, because some of this work can be taxing, but it's not required, because we don't leave anyone out. We'll show everyone something or have something for them to do.
Greg, you know, I'm employers often talk about, you know, the lack of soft skills, and so in the end, we are a service and conservation corps, but the idea is, you heard Jacob talk about a multi-prong approach where they receive an AmeriCorps scholarship, an AmeriCorps stipend, but they also get an AmeriCorps scholarship to continue on to college after they're done with us. They get a variety of credentials and certifications, so they're employable. But what you just heard Jacob and Keontae talk about, we're essentially soft skills. That mental fortitude, an employer will often say, you know, if you come with good soft skills, I can teach you anything. I can teach you how to operate equipment. That is what we're doing. We have a laboratory, essentially, that's taking place out in the field where the soft skills are being transformed. And, you know, you heard me mention somewhat facetiously, well, if you can follow directions when it's 90 degrees or minus 2 degrees, there is merit to that. And it really is. That's code for soft skills, right? If you can follow and follow directions and be a good employee or be a good worker, be a good crew member, then you're set up. You're proving yourself for the future workforce. And the other piece that I wanted to share is that, just as Jacob and Keontae mentioned, it can be physically challenging, but there's also roles within the crew where there's a role to play for everyone who wants to be there. And I use as an example, we had an individual who was going to be joining us who had a service dog, and the abilities were limited for that individual. And so we had thought through, okay, well, how does this individual add value to the team and to the crew? And so that's an example of, you know, we can accommodate. We can be flexible to everyone's abilities. If they want to be there on the crew, we'll make it happen. So,
fantastic. For those of you just joining us, this is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the morning show, and she has invited Chris Litzau, director of the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps, and we're also so happy that we have with us Jacob Sanchez and Keontae Edwards, who are two of the crew supervisors who really are absolutely essential in making all of this happen in these projects being successfully completed. And we're about to turn our attention now to a specific project that is, I think, a relatively new undertaking by the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps involving storm runoff. And Nan, I know that this is a topic that is near and dear to your heart. How did you first come to know about this particular project?
I learned about it through Dave Giordano, the executive director of Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. And he's really excited about it, of course, because it is part and parcel of what we do at Root Pike Wind. We're all about stormwater runoff, water quality, how do we restore the water cycle within our watersheds so that we can ensure clean water into the very, very far future. And there are a lot of different ways to do that on small scale projects as well as very large scale projects. In years past, when Root Pike Wind first started out, we put in rain gardens every time we turned around. We worked with homeowners and we worked with business owners to get rain gardens in. And the other term for a rain garden is a stormwater runoff garden, which isn't as pretty as a rain garden. but essentially what it does through native plants is redirect the waters from our downspouts and other hard surfaces back down underground where it's supposed to go, rather than run off directly into our lakes, rivers, and streams, unchecked and unfiltered. And often the velocity is incredible, which causes road washouts and terrible erosion and all manner of other things. But there are so many other things that can be done that certainly have improved over the years that Chris is going to talk about. And so we're very excited to work alongside the GLCCC and get these things accomplished.
Great. So, Chris Nitzel, give us some sense of what this new project is about and who created it. Is it something that somebody else came up with, or is this a project that you, in a sense, devised?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. So I'll take you back about a year ago, and the Corps, meaning us, the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps, the Corps had finished the construction of a new home in Racine, and I was entering it, touring Mayor Mason at the time through, and I mentioned, he asked, how can we do more projects that get young people to work like your crews? And I mentioned that, you know, we have access to more AmeriCorps slots, and if we could partner that with, say, a Green Jobs Initiative, so take the CCC of 85 years ago when they were planting trees and creating federal parks and state parks, etc. Let's bring that into the present day. And so one of the needs, if you read the paper, is, you know, we've got flooding in Mount Pleasant. We have bluff erosion where homes are tumbling in to the lake all along Kenosha County and Racine County. And so when we talk about green jobs or green infrastructure, we're really talking about native plant installation and creating storage capacity, because ultimately it's the runoff that is causing the challenges in some ways. It's not the only, obviously not the only cause, but it's one possibility of addressing multiple issues that are inherent in our community, that our community is facing, our community meaning Racine and Kenosha. And so that was really the genesis for this notion of let's reduce the runoff. So if you go to our website, for example, you'll see there's a sign-in page, and the idea is we have these crews. You've heard Jacob and Keontae, they operate crews, and these crews are always doing something or in need of learning. The mission of our organization to make sure we provide education and learning opportunities. And so the idea is we have the labor, let's apply it in a manner that will rebuild or grow our community in a positive way, and let's address some of the issues. So that was really the genesis for the reduce the runoff. We noticed that this had been done 10 years ago. You know, Nan had taken the lead on rain gardens years ago. And so we're really just kind of picking up the baton. And that was the partnership that formed the bridge. Nan is building that bridge. And I often say the book of how you should do it correctly is only this big. It's a little tiny booklet. It's the big Bible of what you shouldn't do and all the mistakes that you've along the way. That's what we want. And so that's where Nan and Dave Giordano and Allison Thielen at Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network have really, you know, been able to add that value to the overall initiative and to keep us moving in the right direction. And so right now we're in the process of reaching out to the community, particularly Bluffside property owners, as well as neighborhood residents who are in flood-prone areas. So that's been a primary focus right now for us. It's in the early stages of outreach, but we're talking to the Department of Public Works at Mount Pleasant, Caledonia, the City of Racine, and others to reach those who could benefit from additional storage capacity and green infrastructure.
So in other words, you don't just show up on someone's doorstep and say, we're here to plant native plants in your yard. This is something where you want people in the community to understand the benefit of this, and then I suppose invite you in then to include them in this project.
That's exactly right. So they should, if anyone is interested, they should go to our website. And there is a process where they can essentially register, and then that information will come to us. We have a qualified professional who will come out, schedule a meeting, meet with the property owner or the resident, and do what we call an audit or an assessment to find out what kind of green infrastructure can be installed on that property. What are the issues that we could initiatives that we could take to improve it. So it might be initially something as simple as core aeration or the addition of soil amendments. And what will that do? Well, that will fortify and help the lawn to become much more healthy, and a healthy lawn will absorb more runoff than an unhealthy, scarred, you know, open, you know, dirt ridden lawn area, if I can say that. But Greg, they should go through our website and register, and then based on their location and the issues that they're faced with, we will then prioritize and address those who are most in need. Mm-hmm. So for example, somebody out in Burlington, we'll get to them, but it'll be later, or first we'll address those in Mount Pleasant or Wind Point or wherever that might be.
And is this something that involves some cost for a person where you come in and do this work on their property?
No, there's no cost to the individual. And so I think the thing that we're learning now is we would like to ensure that the blood, sweat, and tears that are invested by Jacob and Keontae and their crew members are that their efforts are maintained in the future. In other words, as an example, a rain garden just doesn't last forever. If you don't tend to it, the weeds will come in and other invasives, and they'll overrun, they'll overtake, and they'll essentially kill off the native plants that have the hydrological aspects to them to absorb the water, absorb the runoff. And so so there is an element of long-term maintenance, and that would be, you know, an expectation of the resident.
Sure.
But no cost to the resident.
What is the website's address, or what do people Google in order to find out more information and potential?
Yeah, it's they can go to greatlakescc.org. That's greatlakescc.org. And there they can see, if they look under Greener Living, the tab Greener Living, they'll see reduce the runoff, and it's spelled, the steps are spelled out there for them, or they can just follow those action steps.
Fantastic. Before we let everybody go, I want to hear just briefly from our two crew supervisors about the kind of things that you are hoping to do in the future in terms of this field of endeavor. I mean, do you see yourselves being part of the Great Lakes CCC for a long, long time, or are there particular goals that you have for what you want to do from here? Jacob, let's start with you.
Sure. I think as much as I love Great Lakes CCC, it's definitely a stepping stone in my career. I do foresee myself continuing to be involved in the field of environmental conservation in one way or another. Hopefully, you know, continuing to work in the nonprofit sector or potentially getting back into working with a group such as the Bureau of Land Management or the Department of Natural Resources. But for now, I'm loving my time here and the skills that I'm gaining, and I foresee it being fruitful for me into the future.
Fantastic. How about you, Keontae Edwards?
Well, I like to eventually own my own business. I'm into the entrepreneur field, but I will always have a hand and not. If not the GLCCC, some sense of conservation. I since I've entered the field, I've loved the field, and I really looking at it. I want to open the door to more people like myself into the field because it's a very fulfilling sense of work.
We can just see that in your face and hear it in your voice as you talk about it, you and Jacob both. I'm so glad that you were part of this conversation today, and so glad that you're part of the good work of the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps. Thank you for being part of our discussion today, and best wishes to both of you.
Thank you.
And Chris Litzau, wonderful to reconnect with you, and thank you for all the good work that you're doing on behalf of the Great Lakes CCC, and we look forward to future visits from you on the morning show.
Sounds good. Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Nan. Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
You betcha. Nan, before everybody goes, I know that you have a brief message, a brief reminder for everybody in these times of COVID.
Just a couple of things. Again, for more information on what the Corps is doing, go to Great Lakes CCC to find out all about it. Also, we'd very much like you to visit the page of Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. We have a new section. It's called Go Native. It's all about native plants. If you want information about how to plant and when to do it and what to plant, go there. Or you can also send me an email or give me a call. And finally, as you know, our local nature centers have had a very, very hard time with COVID restrictions. So please do remember them when you can. Contribute, renew your membership, pick out a new membership if you can. It will all be greatly appreciated.
Very good. Well said. Nan Calvert, thank you for making today possible, and we look forward to seeing you in September.
Always my pleasure. Thanks, Greg.
I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on the morning show, we're going to be talking Star Trek with Mark Cushman, who has written a series of three really interesting books called These Are the Voyages, Gene Roddenberry and Star Trek in the 1970s. This is the decade after NBC abruptly canceled Star Trek, the original series, at the conclusion of its third season. And the 1970s were a tense and chaotic decade in which Gene Roddenberry tried tirelessly to bring Star Trek back to the air. And eventually, of course, Star Trek returns with an animated series and then Star Trek the Motion Picture. We'll kind of paint the picture of all that on tomorrow's morning show. Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from their first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire.